This is Brian Reisman. Welcome to Side Jams, which is now a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network. As a dynamic, powerful singer for the all-female tribute band Judas Priestess, Melissa Vox is helping to deliver an estrogen-fueled take on a classic British heavy metal band. She has also performed with the likes of Dee Snider, Living Colour, L7, and Cyndi Lauper, among many others. Melissa has a deliciously dark, goth and industrial solo project, the first album of which is called The Villainess, and a new remix album is forthcoming, with the first single, This Leather Heart, having been released on February 29th, just after we did this interview. A woman of many talents, she is a classically trained pianist, directs and produces her own music videos, is a visual artist, and she has another musical project in the works which will be unveiling in the near future. Now, beyond music, Melissa is fascinated with all things dark and spooky, which as a lifelong horror and metal fan, I can certainly relate to. For this latest episode of Side Jams, we covered her creepy childhood, her fascination with sinister and eerie things, her supernatural experiences, and her love for seeking out haunted places while out on the road. She even got the chance to meet paranormal investigators Ed and Lorraine Warren and have her photo taken with that creepy doll, Annabelle. This was a really fun interview to do, and it made me think that we should have our own variation of a famous Monty Python song and call it Always Look on the Dark Side of Life.
Okay, everybody, I'm down here in a secret... This is like a game room,
It actually, is. It's a game room.
In your building.
It's a secret Goonie trap for children.
I like that.
Or something.
Yeah, we were just at this this Luna coffee shop, which we like, but like it was like espresso machines going off. And what did you call it?
Oh, I said it was like the portals to hell. It was like the gates of hell.
Opening up,
but really they were just making espressos.
I know, and no one was in line either. I'm like, they're practicing making espressos.
They were just summoning demons.
It was crazy. So anyway, yeah. So... We're here chatting. I mean, actually, I think it's been like a year since I've seen you, amazingly. We met a couple years ago. We've been in touch through Facebook, but like, as many of you know, Melissa Vox is a singer of Judas Priestess.
Yay,
and,
yes.
And also, you are the Villainess.
This is true.
Your atmospheric kind of rocking, but also atmospheric goth project, which has got some new music coming out.
Oh, yeah.
You have a new single?
Oh, yeah.
When is that dropping?
Leap Year. I could not resist
the 29th.
Releasing something on the 29th because I want that date emblazoned on the single forever.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
So you can only listen to it once every 4 years, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's never going to age.
That's good. So
actually, that's Eileen Warrenis' birthday. Speaking of creepy.
On the 29th?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah.
I see you're trying to do something sneaky with that. I'm not sure what it is.
It's just like...
It's the cursed single.
It is a cursed single. It's like, well, the thing about the single is that it's actually a remix of a song I already had released.
Okay.
Like a song from The Villainess called This Is She, which is like a very dark, creepy, like ferociously female, super sexy song. And so I'm going to release a remix album this year because I got some of my friends to like remix tracks and make them sound like, you know, super crazy, but I wanted them to be very different from the original versions in the way that, like, Nine Inch Nails released Broken and Fixed.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, this is the kind of, like answer to that. So the songs are quote-unquote remixes, but they actually end up being new songs on their own.
Okay.
You know, just kind of like how, like, this song is called This Leather Heart, but it is this remix of This Is She, but you never hear This Is She in the song because now it's become this, it's taken on this new life.
Okay.
And... I kept like pushing it on my friends to remix it, and then no one wanted it. So I ended up remixing. Everybody wanted to do my upbeat songs, so I was like, okay, well, I'll do it myself. That's how most things in my life work. So I ended up making the beats and like remixing this thing and like producing it and mixing it myself. Seriously, the beat was like keeping me up at night. I was like, I just have to make it. So I did, and now I'm releasing it as a way to like precursor this remix album, and I'm pretty proud of it because it's like something that people don't necessarily know me for is to make this like kind of like super throbby, like deep electro industrial. It is industrial metal because I kept the guitars.
Mm-hmm.
So like you know Doc Coyle, right?
Yeah.
He's in Bad Wolves and he was in God Forbid.
Yeah.
He plays guitar on all my stuff. He's got the guitar parts. I just chopped up his guitar parts and layered them onto this new mass.
Okay.
And it just sounds really heavy. So if ever there was anything such as industrial, gothic metal, this is it. With breakbeats.
With breakbeats, of course.
So it's like, it's super funky. So like think like Art of Noise, you know, like Moments in Love, Art of Noise. And think Nine Inch Nails Fixed. because that's what they are. It's that together.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, the villainous stuff is it has a rock edge, but some stuff is very kind of ethereal and ambient. I mean, you and I, I grew up, I mean, I'm a little older than you, but we both seem to have probably glommed onto a lot of the 90s ethereal
glommed.
Gothic.
That's a very 90s term.
Yes. Oh, wow, I managed to do that. It's completely accidentally.
I love it.
You know, in the 80s, goth I got into later on. I don't know about you, but there's a definite difference. You can hear the influence of The Cure and Sue and everything like that in the later stuff. But then it was this whole other Project Records, Test Records thing, and the Heavenly Voices out of Europe, mm-hmm. all the kind of beautiful voices. It actually kind of, I think, became a bit of a template for the Beauty and the Beast stuff. They mm-hmm. would hear with Theater of Tragedy and, mm-hmm. and stuff from then on. You know, all the stuff that we have now. The bands like Leaves Eyes, Within Temptation, Nightwish, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I'm not so much into, like, I appreciate symphonic metal, but I'm more gothic metal, but also, like, I like beats. Like, it has to have, like, a really dope beat,
yeah.
and it's gotta have something unusual, genre-bending edge to it.
Okay.
Like, where you hear unexpected sounds, or you hear, like, you know, unexpected, you know, tones, or even rhythms and things like that. Like, I like to take, like, a reggaeton beat and make it, like, super heavy. Because it just seems more aggressive to me. It's like just, there's a very tribal like energy. I think that's part of like Tool's magic.
Mm-hmm.
Is like the beats are so tribal.
Yeah.
Like you don't really realize it at first, and you're like, why does this sound like the heaviest shit ever? And it's because the beats are just like old tribal beats in a way. It's really primal.
And you and I also bonded on just spooky stuff.
Oh yeah,
and horror movies. And I was like,
you're
one of those.
I'm one of those. A dark heart. Yes, we're dark hearts.
You've been telling me a story about when you were a kid that you kind of were like the blood splattered bride. That's
yes.
kind of what you were. So tell everybody about that.
Okay, so this is like a crazy little anecdote from my past. So when I was a kid, I was the flower girl in my cousin's wedding, and it was the first time I had gotten my own, like, flowy gown, and it was so goth. I mean, it was ridiculously, obscenely goth,
yeah.
and it was just kind of, like, this pale, ivory, you know, sheer tulle material, and very, you know, it kind of belled out, so when you walked, there was, like, a train, you know, it's just,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
a super gothic, And I loved it so much. So on Saturday mornings, I used to get up and watch horror movies. You know, my parents would be sleeping upstairs. It'd be like early in the morning. They just want to sleep in. And I'm downstairs watching like The Howling. And and so like I got the bright idea like, yeah, I'm going to be like a blood bride. So like I got my mom's red lipstick, like painted my lips red, of course. And then like drew blood slashes and splatters on this gown. And took photos of myself, Polaroids.
Wow.
And I thought I looked great. My mom saw the dress and she was like, what are you doing? She was so beside herself. And I was like, oh, I'm in a horror movie. She was like, no, you're not. Like, it was just, I don't know. It was too crazy. But yeah, so I was always drawn to like dark things for whatever reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really am not sure why, just because.
Because you liked it.
Just because. It was exciting. You know, I told you this story about how I used to watch, my first horror movie was Dawn of the Dead, and
yeah.
I would remember that scene where all the zombies were falling out of the elevator, and I used to think about that all the time when I would look at the closet door when I was sleeping, and it was, like, exciting. You know, it's like I wanted the zombies to come out, like I wanted to be, you know. I don't know, I wanted to see them. I wanted to be, like, with them or part of them or hang with them or I don't know, some crazy thing. But my supernatural favorite, I'm a vampire person.
Ah.
I love vampires.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have a thing.
Your thing.
I like a vampire
story. I don't see
story.
Any fangs yet, though.
You know what? I kind of have a natural fang.
A little bit.
But that was not intentional. It's just like, it's nature. But, yeah, I have a soft spot for vampire stories. More than zombies. I don't really love zombies. I would say that Dawn of the Dead thing was like, it was just the gateway drug. I'm a vampire person and a supernatural person. Like, I love poltergeist and stories about possessions and things like that.
Now you said you had a vampire story.
Hmm?
You said you had a vampire story?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. You just like vampire stories.
I like vampire stories. But I had met the Warrens. You know who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
I met the Warrens in 1998.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
What were they like?
They were exactly like how they're depicted in the Conjuring movies. They are like that. They came to my school. Like, you know how, like, at the beginning of the Conjuring movies, you see them, like, at some school, like doing a presentation.
Yeah.
Like that's what they did at my school.
Wow.
So because I went to a music conservatory, we didn't have sports teams. So I was on the student government, and we thought it would be cute for Spirit Week to actually have it be like supernatural themed. So, so our Spirit Week was featured the Warrens. And I remember this girl, Melinda, from my class was like, oh my God, there's this couple and they're ghost hunters. They're real life ghost hunters. And it's like, this is like the internet was like, was around, but it wasn't like what it is now.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you really had to search for somebody to find stuff like this. It wasn't like loads and loads of tons of information, especially like for older stuff. It was like you had to dig. So she found these, the Warrens on the internet and then booked them to come to the school and show slides and videos of Amityville and possessions and all these cases that they had worked on.
Wow.
Yeah. So I.
You were creeped out?
No. Yeah, no, not at all. I was like, this is awesome. And actually, Lorraine, like, the school was in Boston, so it was like suspect as far, it was haunting suspect.
Yeah, yeah.
For sure. And there was a couple weird incidents that happened when they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up talking to them. And then later going to the Warren's house in Connecticut, where they have the museum in the basement with all their collectibles and stuff, and was able to, like, I reconnected with Lorraine and, like, her son-in-law, who's now taken over the business since she's passed and all this.
So
it's like, it goes deep.
You saw all that spooky stuff?
Oh, I have pictures with Annabelle. People are like, how could you even stand near that thing? And I'm like, I loved it. I don't know.
It's just, yeah, she hasn't come for a visit lately, has she?
No, she has not. Unfortunately, I wish she would call or write something.
Oh, I'm sure she'll find a way to get to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Like, as a kid, I was fascinated. Like, I had a book of spiders. For the first years of my life, I loved spiders. And I had this book with these big pictures. And it's strange because then when I laid it, I just didn't like spiders. Probably because they would always bite me or whatever. I think we used to go camping, and the daddy long legs would always crawl up on me. I'm like, really, guys?
You know, you're a spider magnet.
Yeah, and then later on, I ended up, I had a girlfriend who had a pet tarantula. And at one point, I had two pet tarantulas.
See, like, I'm fascinated by tarantulas. I'm attracted to spiders.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Like, if for whatever reason. But I would never imagine owning one or having to care for one.
Yeah, it's...
That's like another level of... I don't know what that is. Ever ask her why?
She just liked them. I mean, she had a spider tattoo. There's something about them. I'm trying to remember why she did. I remember that at one point, you know, one of her apartments was off of Main High, I think Route 93 in Boston, and she had to feed it crickets. So outside the highway is roaring by, and inside there's these crickets chirping. I'm like, this is just really weird. It's like city living and country living combined together at night.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, interestingly enough, every time I finished a song, I've never said this on record, but like my closest friends know, every time I finished a song at this studio that I worked out of in Hollywood, like spiders would come out.
Really?
In this studio space. It was the weirdest thing. I have pictures of it. Like, every time I finished a song, it was like all these spiders would come out and say hi. It was the weirdest thing.
That's your biggest fan base, evidently.
Kind of, yeah.
Too bad they can't pay.
Just call me Black Widow. Yeah, too bad. Yeah, seriously.
Well, as a kid, I mean, I remember I was obsessed with this movie. Well, I love Godzilla movies. Evidently, I would scare the children in kindergarten by imitating the Godzilla movies that I saw. Because, you know.
Did you do that for me right now? What would you do?
I don't remember what I did. It was just like me going,
like a roar.
Like, I'd be like, roar, but I guess I must have put my hands on and been like, you know, and I guess the kids were disturbed by this. And I was like, hey, what's wrong?
That's hugely effective.
Yeah, it's great.
Even now.
You know, I would imagine, you know, whatever Rodan flying overhead, they'd know what the hell was going on. Like, what's wrong with this kid? And then, you know, I love this movie, The Beast with Five Fingers, with Peter Lorre, about this pianist who has these people visiting his villa. He dies, and then his severed hand comes back to life. And the optical effects were so good that when they had the hand playing the piano at night, you could see it was kind of cut off, and you could see, like, the two wrist bones there. Like, it was so good that it looks fantastic today. And so I can understand now why when I was, like, a tater tot, how that it freaked me out for years of having dreams of this severed hand flying at me trying to get me. It's like you have those kind of things.
Well, I kind of, like, took it to another level when I was a kid.
Uh-oh.
Like, I know it's so twisted, but I feel like there's other girls that maybe... Horror goth girls, if you're out there.
Oh, sure.
And you want to leave something in the comments about this, because I think it's a thing. I remember as a kid being sexually attracted to Tim Curry as Darkness in Legend. Like,
that's
when he was the devil. Like, seriously, if you, like, probably if you put it on right now, like, I'd have to have a moment alone. Like, it's like, it's a very erotic thing.
That's like sort of like the ultimate bad boy thing. Like, it's just,
yeah, like he's like a huge, like, demon.
Devil.
Yeah,
demon.
Like, it's like, and like with the voice and everything, it was just like so hot, you know. Like, I was a kid, I used to pretend I was Lily, you know, Black Lily with the cage on her head and the black dress. Now we're really getting into my fantasies, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, this is where it all comes from. My poor parents, they have no idea.
Splash, splash, splash. Splash Weather Repel Premium Windshield Wash features a 3-in-1 formula that repels rain, sleet, snow, and bugs while leaving a streak-free shine. It keeps you seeing safely all year long. Pick up some at Walmart today.
See safely on the road when you apply a little splash.
What happened?
I had posters of Freddy Krueger on my wall when I was a kid that I used to kiss.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like next level stuff. It's
like the opposite of Elvira. She makes a joke at everything. Like, no, man, bring it on.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Elvira, she's like the ultimate, right? I mean,
it's funny because I remember I had a discussion with somebody that I know who runs a horror comic website, and he was talking about the fact that Vampyro was the original and Elvira kind of came along mm-hmm. and sexed up that whole thing.
Yes, for sure.
And then Vampyro faded. And there's some people who remember her, but not the same way they remember Elvira, because they remember the boobs, of course, and all that.
Well, Elvira was, like, so commercial. I mean, she was, like, she did, like, you know, you would go to, like, a liquor store, and there's a cutout of her, like, a cardboard cutout of her, like, selling beer and shit. You know, it's, like, it's so random.
Well, it's funny, too, like,
it's super commercial.
I think about the goth and metal worlds, because, in a way, like, the goth scene doesn't ever really want to get as huge as, like, say, what metal became. Metal's underground, and yet it's not. It's still mainstream enough that certain bands are getting in the top 5 or top 10, whereas, like, goth bands don't really do that. Goth
artists
rarely.
It's so underground.
Or it's like
still.
A crossover thing like Zola Jesus, where it just sort of, it's not truly goth, but it can appeal to goths, I guess,
right,
in a way. Like,
right.
You rarely ever get these things. I remember Cher's son had a band called Dead Sea, which did one album. Mm-hmm. I had the album that they didn't release, and then the album that they released was better. But, like, there was these things that, the late 90s, I think just pre-Columbine, goth was sort of ready to have its main...
Yeah.
It had its mainstream moment in the 80s, but this was a different thing.
Well, like, Type-O Negative was, like, the ultimate goth metal band, you know?
Yeah. And they were tongue-in-cheek, too, though.
Right,
you know,
no,
My Girlfriend's
sure.
Girlfriend and stuff
oh, yeah.
like that. It's all... Whereas, like, I don't
Kill
think...
Kill all the white people was yes. a song. I was like, what the... Like,
exactly.
They would just make jokes. I mean, that's a whole another level. But, like, Danzig was doing that thing...
But the real goth stuff, like, the real goth stuff, like the real sort of, as opposed to heavy music, like just more like ethereal and kind of even classic 80s goth or some of that stuff was sort of getting there. And then I think Columbine kind of...
Well, Marilyn Manson was like goth rock, and then it ended up taking on this whole other thing. And, you know, Columbine made that whole thing come crashing down.
Yeah, I think there was a prejudice that kind of came about. I don't think it was just Columbine, but I just feel like I was writing stories.
That was a turning point, for sure.
Yeah, I remember writing stories for Detour and CMJ in the late
90s. Anytime, go ahead.
No, it just felt like it was getting there.
Yeah, well, anytime an artist gets pegged or blamed for loss of life, you know, over their music. I mean, Judas Priest went through it too.
Yep.
You know, it's like
the 30th anniversary of that this year.
Oh my God, it's so crazy. I'm late with Priest, so, like, I didn't know when that whole thing happened, but I watched the doc way after the fact.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I can't even imagine what it would feel like to be, like, the artist and, like, sitting on the stand, like, defending your lyrics and defending, like, what you meant to say versus what you don't mean to say and, like, you know, how that could have triggered someone to take their own life and then having to, like, defending your work to family who want answers and a scapegoat, you know. I can only imagine that feeling. That's so...
I don't think it could really happen today because I think we've already had enough precedent set. And I look at horror movies, actually. Horror movies are more mainstream now in the last 10 years than they've ever been.
Yes.
Well, the 50s and 60s, it tended to be camp. There were some things that were spooky, but there was a lot of camp stuff because Hollywood treated sci-fi the same way, like ridiculous-looking aliens that were just made out of rubber that looked really bad.
Right.
And then this, like, the arrival of, like, Rosemary's Baby and The Exorcist,
well,
they got amped up.
The stories got better.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, I was a huge Exorcist fan.
And,
like, I didn't really get into Rosemary's Baby until later because I don't like pregnancy horror stories for whatever reason. I'm just like, okay, you lost me. I'm just kind of like, blah. But,
lives.
The Exorcist is the is the crown. It's the crown jewel of horror.
But then there's some people. I have a friend who's like my age who thinks it's a lot of it's kind of funny. Like there are some people I mean, there's
borderline funny. Yeah. Of course. I mean, it's still amazing. The spider walk is kind of funny.
But it creeped me out when I saw it the first time.
Of course.
And you're like, whoa. But I guess, I don't know, the 80s horror kind of had this weird turn, though, because of Freddy Krueger and Michael Myers and
Jason. Well, you end up getting the franchise horror.
The franchise, movies. And it got more humorous, because after a certain point, even the Friday the 13th movies, they just, with all the kills. They started getting funny, because, like, you can't keep making this look scary. You know what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, as a kid, I remember seeing Friday the 13th, like, part 2 on cable, and it was the opening scene where this woman finds the head in the refrigerator and that freaked me out. And today, it's a little different because people have gotten so used to extreme violence and some of the crazy stuff that went on and all the torture porn that came in the wake of Saw, particularly that whole franchise, that it's different now.
Yeah.
It's sort of fascinating to see what older horror movies people still like or they're attracted to, because you think that there's certain movies that you think, oh, you're going to love this, and they're like, eh.
Right.
But then, you know, like I have a friend of mine, his son is 17, and he likes a lot of that old stuff. He did wait to a certain age to let him see it, though. He didn't let him watch it at, like, 10 years old, which I thought was interesting. You know, he waited until he was, you know, like, early teens to really get it. So that's when we would be, well, you were watching The Howling and probably even
you
were
really
single digits,
young.
So, I mean.
And, like, my friend's parents used to tell my parents, don't let her bring horror movies over to our house anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, it was that bad. Like, I was so addicted.
But you seem so sweet and normal.
Well, when
on stage, obviously, you're raging in your metal mode.
Because
but
I'm able to, like, vent that shit, you know? I feel like if you don't have an outlet, that's what makes you crazy.
Yeah, because people probably look at me and go, oh, you're so nice. I'm like, yeah, but inside my mind lurks some very deep thoughts.
What did you call it? You said tragic. Tragic romantic.
Yeah, I'm with the goth thing. I have a tragic romantic allure. I'm in touch with my inner tragedy. That's what it is.
And I love it.
And I think also, like, you and I, you know, went through certain normal teenage things, but, you know, I don't think either of us has had, like, major, there's certain major trauma people have gone through. And I think people who have been through a lot of really tough stuff probably don't view it the same way we do. I don't know what the fascination is with that darkness, why I like it. I mean, I collect old DC horror comics. I still keep up with new horror movies.
I pretty much go see everything, even the bad stuff. I love anything that, like, A24 puts out or Blumhouse. Like, they're making really cool, like, unique horror stories right now.
The Witch.
So, like, of course. And like,
Hereditary.
You know, Hereditary is, like, that to me, that's, like, one of the best horror movies to come out in recent. Also, Ari Aster is, like, but he makes those stories. Like, he's one of those people that I was telling you, like, I'm only interested in stuff I've never seen before.
Yeah.
And he's one of those that consistently makes stuff that has just never been explored. You know, like, ultimately, like, I always have said, like, the most horrifying things are, like, people, real life, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And even, like, family secrets and things like that. Like, he goes into that territory, which, like, has never really fully been realized in any other horror movies. Not like this.
Well, you know, what's interesting, too, is that the Italian horror of, like, Lucio Fulci and Dario Argento, it has some really striking imagery. The stories aren't always amazing, but the imagery in Tenebrae is pretty wild. But then there's also there's more than an undercurrent of misogyny there.
Of course.
Like, as a woman, how do you feel about seeing a lot of that stuff?
Well, I mean, like, I'm, I guess, desensitized to a lot of it, honestly. But, like, now I've kind of reached a stage in my life where I'm just like, I don't want to see that story anymore. Like, I'm tired of it. Yeah. I'd rather see, like, I think that's part of the reason why Hereditary was so damn good to me, was, like, the female lead is unreal. Like, you've never seen a character like that. Toni Collette's character is unreal. And then, like, some of the things that she does in it, you're just like, like I said, you've never seen it before. But it was, like, a fully fleshed out character. That's what I enjoy. I want to see fully fleshed out characters that have a lot of depth, that do some of the most fucked up visual things you've ever seen in camera. You know, stuff that stays with you. When you look at it, you're going to remember it when you go home and turn off the lights. That's the kind of stuff that I like.
I like it when it has a point. Like, my favorite horror movie is The Changeling with George C. Scott, which a haunted house movie, which it's a murder mystery, but it's got different levels going on in it.
I don't like baby things, though, because there's, like, the changeling
kid.
I get lost on, like, what if baby pregnancy horrors. I just go,
I love things that challenge your sense of reality. It also, there's a lot of that stuff. And I mean, and then, you know, in music, The thing with goth is I've actually learned to appreciate the lyrics of Sisters of Mercy a lot as I get older.
Sure.
You think of them as like the prototypical goth band. When you listen to what they're talking about, it's very different.
It's very different, yeah.
Like more real-world themes.
It's the thing with like goth. I think people listen to the music and they don't realize the depth of what is going on lyrically.
Yeah.
You know? But the ones that do, those are the ones that fall in love with it, you know?
The tragic
it's the same thing with The Cure, though.
Yeah.
Because The Cure, like, I mean, Robert Smith says that he doesn't identify The Cure as a goth band, which, like, how can you say that? But he says he doesn't. But arguably, they're a pop band to some degree.
Let's go to bed and, Friday I'm in love.
But he said, like, he was like, the only goth song that we ever wrote was Cold off of Pornography.
Well, Disintegration's a pretty effing freaking
well, that's
what
I dark thought too.
Fucking record,
but I was
man.
Just like, yeah, it's goth. He just, you know, whatever.
Well, but you know what it is? I can understand, like Susie and the Banshees and Sisters, for them to not say they're goth. I mean, like, when Andrew Eldritch is like, we're not goth, like, dude, you are.
Like, you are.
But Bauhaus saw themselves as, like, an art rock band, and I can see why, because not all of those songs have that dark quality. They're weird and noisy and experimental at times, but they're not totally... You know, Bela Lugosi's Dead, I'm so sick of that song, and it gets associated with the hunger.
People always use it as, like, I mean, that's like the national anthem for goths.
Yeah, and it's overplayed. I mean, it's the same thing with The Cure, where they walked a line, but then in the 90s it went in all these different directions. So it was like ethereal,
well,
and it was heavenly voices.
It comes down to song structure.
Electro-industrial, electro-goth.
Yeah, it comes down to song structure, really. I thoroughly believe that. Like, for example, like, Trent Reznor wrote great songs that had structure.
Yeah.
Even though he's industrial, the songwriting was a pop song style. So, like, you couldn't necessarily... It's unfair to call him just flat-out industrial. And I think that's the same with The Cure. Like, they're gothy, but they wrote a pop song structure.
Yeah.
So that's why they don't want to be referred to as goth, because they're probably thinking as musicians... Goth means we're kind of making formless music when it's not.
Well, Trent Reznor to me was more goth than, say, Marilyn Manson. I always thought there was much more of that vibe with him. I thought it was funny when Madonna did her goth thing with Frozen, and then she's like, "Oh, I'm not goth." I'm like, "Yeah, but you just totally, ripped off the image and the whole shtick.
Yeah.
Don't sit there and like deny it." That pissed me off. It's
well,
like,
because I
yeah,
mean,
she's Madonna.
She's just divisive. Period. That's all. She should have her own genre called divisive.
Yeah.
You know, or derivative. You know, whatever. But yeah, oh, but I digress. I did want to say that, like, you know, because we were talking about, like, how all of this is, like, overlapping and like, an incestuous thing.
Goth,
for me,
metal, horror.
Goth, metal, horror.
Yeah.
So when I'm on tour, I always try to hit up, like, the weird points of interest.
Yeah.
Like, the oddities, the unusual, like, sites where this happened, or such and such movie, horror movie was filmed here, or that kind of thing. So, like... Like, when people ask questions like, oh, so, like, when you're on the road, like, what do? Like, when you're not, like, doing the show? And it's, like, you know, it's me driving around whatever band I'm with to find haunted places or to find, like,
did you find
weirdo spots. Oh, yeah.
What was the most,
what
was the most haunted place
I do my research before I get there. The most haunted place? Well, we played up in Erie. Isn't that perfect? Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
At this place called Sherlock's. To any touring band that is driving, you know, through the Midwest to the East Coast, you've probably played Sherlock's, any rock band. The venue is old as hell. I think it's closed now. The venue's old as hell, and when you go in there, you just feel, like, energy, presence, something.
Mm-hmm.
And each of us could tell you individual stories about how we were upstairs in a dressing room by ourselves at some point and felt like something was there looking at us.
Oh, wow.
Like, all of us have the same stories, like, of us being there alone and like, had to get out of the space because it seemed like we weren't by ourselves. Like, all of us have the same stories. And then in the basement of that place, there's tunnels. And they said that, like, part of the tunnels were used during the Underground Railroad or for the Underground Railroad.
Right.
And they tried to close up one side of it. So it literally looks like... Like an Edgar Allan Poe story, like where they tried to bury someone alive in the tunnel, you know, like a cask. Josette tells it better than I do. Josette, guitar player from Judas Priest, tells this story better than I do because I was like too caught up in it. We were trying to contact spirits in the basement of Sherlock's, and it was just like us with like the light of our cell phones in this like dark tunnel. And there were rocks on the wall. And if you ran your hand over them, it would make like a rain sound as they would fall. So I was doing that, trying to like reach out to, you know, these spirits. And then I stopped doing it. And then I guess Josette and Gita were doing it. And then they stopped doing it, but the sound continued. And they had stopped doing it. Like, we weren't doing it anymore, but it was continuing. And I didn't realize it at the time because I was, like, doing all the talking. And we were, like, drunk and, like, being, like, you know, like, if anyone's in here, you know, you know, make your presence known.
Yeah, those ghost shows.
And, yeah. And these girls were, like, freaking out because they could still hear the sounds. And I thought that they were making the rocks fall, but actually it was not any of us that was doing that. And I have it on audio somewhere. That was one of, like, the creepiest moments.
And you're a big Edgar Allan Poe fan, too. You told me. Oh, you're from Baltimore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You had the caretaker story.
Yes. Yeah. So at, like, fourth grade, they first taught us about Edgar Allan Poe. Mm-hmm. That was, like, our intro to Poe. And I was just obsessed from that moment on. And we went on a field trip to his grave and his house in Baltimore. And I met the caretaker, and he said in all the years that he's ever been there, like, and seen field trips come and go, he said no student had ever brought flowers to the grave. I had brought all these roses to lay on the grave of Edgar and his wife and his mom.
That's cool.
And so because of that, he remembered me, and he included me. And they had, like, a ceremony on the anniversary of his death, like, a year later, and I was in the ceremony, so... Goth bragging rights over here, big time.
And now, now you're buddies.
Now we're buddies, and we still talk on Facebook, actually. And this is since I was in fourth grade, okay?
Wow.
Like, and, you know, he looks like how a caretaker should look. He's got brown tweed jackets and, you know, thick glasses, and he's got four fingers on one hand, which I never asked him how that happened because... It's more fun to, like, think of how it happened and imagine how it happened than to ask him the truth. But he's still the caretaker.
Do you think that maybe part of the attraction to dark stuff for you is the imagination that you're just conjuring these things in your mind?
Oh, of course. Of course. I'm an only child, so that was probably the big payoff, was my mind would be able to, like, weave these stories and create these pictures and imagine... You know, these unusual situations in my head, you know.
Have you ever thought about why you like all the dark stuff?
Sure. I've thought about why. Have I come up with any good reasons?
No.
It's just something I've been into since I was a kid, and there's literally no explanation for it, other than I find it exciting.
You read any horror books?
Oh, sure. I like true crime, you know. I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. I love HLM. You know, I listen to HLM on Sirius satellite radio and watch, like, Forensic Files and, you know, serial killer stories.
And my girlfriend loves the true crime stuff, which can be more gruesome than some of the stuff that we, you know,
watch. I'm a big Eileen Warnes fan. I like anything that, you know, I love her work. I was so obsessed when she first came out because I was still a kid.
Yeah.
And I remember the news was blowing up going, there's the first female serial killer. And I was just like, wow, like, what happened that pushed her to this? Because women don't do that shit. So I find her more fascinating. Like, it's more of, like, a fascination rather than, like, oh, I want to be like her or anything like that. I mean, it's like, that's not the interest. I'm amazed by stories, you know, unusual stories.
We conjure our own ghosts in our mind. We live with those every day.
Sure.
And I think that's a lot of horror films are metaphorical, and people who are critical of certain ones don't get that it's not simply about that. The Haunting of Hill House, the series, is about grief. Mm-hmm. It's about loss.
Yes.
It's about coping with a lot of emotions you don't know how to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those things in there that could be real ghosts, could be things in people's minds.
Sure.
It could be the house, you know, it's the house manipulating them into whatever. But
sure.
Yeah.
We had a thing like that. Okay, so, like, I grew up in Maryland, between, like, Baltimore and D.C.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, Ellicott City, Columbia. And, like, it's super old. Like, it's, like, the buildings are old. But there was this one spot in Ellicott City called Hell House. It was a school that had burned down, like, a women's college that also was, like, I don't know. They said, there's so many stories about it. They said it was used as a mental, you know, like a mental ward, like a psych ward or whatever. And it was a college. It was this and that, and, you know. And it was this big, sprawling building that sat on top of the highest point in Ellicott City. So it was not uncommon for, like, teenagers to go down there and, like, smash the windows out or go up there and, like, do drugs, have sex, like, drink, whatever, you know. Or just, like, try to climb in and, like, look around for, like, you know, a cheap thrill, whatever. But, like, I used to go up there. Like, me. Like, I would go up there with a flashlight and just, like, you know, look around. Like, me and my best friend at the time would go up there and try to crawl into the house. You know, I mean, like, crazy shit. And there's a lot of cults in that area. So it was, like, not uncommon to see, like, people, like, a group of people in black trench coats, you know, walking around up there. Or to see, like, pentagrams carved into the trees with barbed wire wrapped around them.
Wow.
Or, like, dead animals in a circle. You know, like, that's the kind of shit that was going on where I grew up. You know? So, like, it was normal.
That explains so much about you now.
Doesn't it? See, it all makes sense. Like, we used to go up there just for kicks, just for fun, just to look around. You know? I wish I had, like, photos of this because it actually, like, got burned down on Halloween one year. And now they do weddings up there. Can you believe it? They do weddings up there. And special events. You can, like, get married at Hell House.
And you wonder what they're taking home later on.
I know, right?
Take home with them.
But there used to be a caretaker up there that would shoot you, like, if you, like, if he caught you on the property. Like,
so, like,
there was all kinds of shit that went on up there. But I've always been attracted to that kind of thing. And any time that there's, like, a weird point of interest like that, like, I must go. I drove the priestess girls, like, out into some field in Pennsylvania because they said the gates of hell were out there. Uh-huh. And all we found was a bunch of deer. But we went for it, damn it. Actually, Hillary Blaze's sister is a ghost hunter. Yeah, she would go on, like, whatever they're called, hunts, whatever the hell. I don't know. That shit is fun to me. It's my dream to, like, finish. Well, I have to finish working on it, but I have a horror movie story that I wrote the treatment for, and I have to, like, flesh it out more. It could or could not be a Conjuring, because it involves the Warrens.
Well, I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you.
I think I'm like, go ahead. We didn't even get into, like, the October trips thing. But I just was going to tell you, super quick. Every October, I go around to all the, like, haunted events and, like, just try to cram as many of them in as possible. So I do, like, L.A. Haunted Hayride. I do Universal Horror Nights. I do, Queen Mary 2.
Wow.
Haunted Harbor. I do... I've gone to haunts in Nevada. I've gone to haunts in Florida, all over the East Coast, D.C.
Yeah.
I go to, like, Blood Manor in Bain in New York. I go to I go to Brighton Asylum in New Jersey. I mean, like, I've gone to so many. Field of Screams in Maryland.
That makes you happy.
Oh, yeah. But I'll go to, like, 2-3 in a night if I can.
And you're still not sick of it.
No.
That's pretty awesome.
I, like, enjoy it so much. That's, like, one of my obsessions. And I've only met two other people that do the same. They're like, yeah, they go out to, like, this and that haunt, you know, this new haunt that opened up for October, you know. Yeah.
You're fear addicts.
But, like, me and my friend got kicked out of one of these haunts, or they tried to remove us because we were taking too long to get through because we were looking at everything and, like, taking pictures.
Wow.
And they were, like, on the radio as they, like, kicked us out. And they're like, yeah, they're out now. Yeah, got them out. Okay. And these people were like, what were you guys doing in there? I was like, just looking at everything.
That's funny.
They were so disturbed.
That's funny. Excellent.
I'm an addict, it's true.
That wraps up this latest episode of Side Jams. Please join me for the next installment, which will be coming soon. The tunes used in this episode are from Fox and the Law, and I licensed them through AudioSocket. As always, thank you very much for listening.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.